You can talk all you want to about no such things as premonitions, visions, hoodooed ships and sailors' superstitions, but by gorry, every so often a set of circumstances comes along that just can't be coincidence. We were talking about these strange coincidences at the monthly meeting of the Peabody Museum Associates down in Salem a few weeks ago. And somebody asked if I'd ever heard the story of the Bucksport-built ship N.T. Hill. Quite by coincidence, I had heard about the N.T. Hill. And it's such a perfect example of premonition, sailor superstitions, and hoodooed ships, I think you'll be interested. Mr. Nahum T. Hill, T for train, was one of several prosperous, respected, big businessmen in Bucksport, Maine, when that thriving upriver port was in its heyday. He owned a big square house at the corner of Main and Mechanic Streets, but instead of painting it white, as most of the houses were at that time, Nathan chose a sickly shade of yellow, much to the disgust of the Congregationalists, whose spotless white church stood nearby. "Why don't you paint her white?" the church folks asked. And Nathan, being an independent Yankee, said tartly, "None of your business." The real reason was because he thought white paint got soiled too easily. Now, in those days, it was common practice to name a new ship for the largest stockholder. And as Nahum T. Hill had the most money invested in the full rig ship being built in the gin yard of Bucksport, she was named N.T. Hill. You can find a lot of stories about this ill-fated ship if you talk to the old-timers in Bucksport. And when we were there last summer, we were told that when the ship was finished and about to be launched, old Captain J.B. Snow, who was to take the N.T. Hill on her maiden voyage, had trouble in lining up a crew. The local men, for one reason or another, didn't want to go. That didn't faze Mr. Hill one iota. He sent to Boston for a crew, and according to one old sea dog we met, N.T. got more than he bargained for. Them furriners from Boston were so plastered they couldn't walk the gangplank, and the day she was launched, they were drunk as lords. When the late Henry Buxton was doing his column for the Bangor Daily News back in 1938, he had several stories about N.T. Hill and the ship that bore his name, and one of them concerned Ambrose H. White, ex-vice president of the International Paper Company. Seems Mr. White was 7 years old when the N.T. Hill slid into the Penobscot up in Bucksport, and little Ambrose stood with his father beside a sturdy oak tree to watch the big event. Attached to that oak tree was a stout cable to keep the ship on a straight course as she slid down the ways. Little Ambrose didn't like the looks of that big black rope, and pulling on his father's coattail, he said, "Let's not stand so close, Papa. I'm afraid the tree will topple over." "Nonsense, son. That's an oak tree." But the boy begged so hard they did move a short distance away. And it's lucky they did, for when the blocks were knocked from under the big square rigger and she started to slide, the cable straightened, grew taut, and then with the sound of a cannon, that oak tree split wide open, sending a shower of chips in all directions. One big branch crashed to the ground on the very spot where Ambrose White and his father had been standing. When the tree toppled, releasing the cable, the ship swung round and fetched up in the mud flats over on Verona Island. And everybody said, "That's a sure sign of bad luck." And while she was being towed back to the company wharf to be rigged, another mishap occurred. Captain Jabez, a stickler for having everything shipshape, noticed that the ship's flag had fouled around the mainmast, and he called to Mate Harlow, "Send a man aloft there and shake it free." The sailor climbed the rigging like a tomcat after a robin, freed the flag, and started back down. Suddenly, he either slipped or became faint, and before the horrified gaze of the crowd, he pitched headlong into the ratlins. Captain Snow sent the injured sailor ashore, and Dr. Collins took him to the hospital. Luckily, he was still there when the N.T. Hill sailed for Liverpool. Instead of killing him, that 100-foot fall had saved his life. Now, of course, all these mishaps coming in rapid succession had a pronounced effect on the morale of the already superstitious crew. But nothing bothered old Captain Jabez Snow. Things like that rolled off his broad back like water off a duck. The only trouble he had was domestic. And they'll tell you up in Bucksport that just before he sailed on his last voyage as skipper of the N.T. Hill, Mrs. Snow went to a local lawyer and said she wanted a divorce. The attorney, a salty fellow himself, said, "Now don't you start dragging your anchor, ma'am. I'll admit Captain Jabez has always been lucky, but this ship is jinxed. You just rest on your oars a spell. Maybe you won't have to divorce it. And as things turned out, she didn't. Captain J.B. Snow was one of the best deep water captains of his day, and because he had the reputation of being a lucky skipper, the owners were most anxious to have him take the N.T. Hill on her maiden voyage. J.B.'s playing around for more money reminded them he'd planned to retire that fall. But satisfactory terms were finally arranged, and Captain Snow chuckled. The old and the new, eh? Well, I guess I'll give him a record to shoot at. This ship is sturdy and fast, and I guess I can find a cargo that'll make money for all of us. So they sailed. And they hadn't been out very long when another accident occurred that firmly convinced the crew the N.T. Hill was hoodooed for fair. It was breezing on, and suddenly a great green wave rose from the surface of the frothy ocean, smashed across the deck, and carried one of the crew right out of sight. He proved to be a bucksport boy named Silly, whom Captain Snow was fond of. But with the wind blowing half a gale, Jabez knew if he tried to wear around, he'd tear his spars out. So he shut his ears to the frantic cries of the drowning man off the starboard side and kept right on going. Now the crew was really scared, and you can hardly blame them. All the way to Liverpool, they cowered in the forecastle, and any little noise or unusual happening was taken as an additional sign of the bad luck they were sure was following them. Once ashore in Liverpool, they headed with haste for the waterfront taverns to drown their increasing apprehension. After the N.T. Hill had been ironed in Liverpool, Captain Jabez took on a cargo of coal and sailed for Rangoon. There, the coal was sold at a handsome profit, and Jabez looked around for return cargo that he could clean up on. As I said, this was to be his last voyage, and Captain Jabez not only wanted to establish a record for speed, but he wanted to make a boodle of money for himself and his backers in Bucksport. Scouting around with his ear to the ground, Captain Snow learned that a bumper crop of rice was expected that year. And by bargaining, as only a Yankee can, it seemed as if he was about to achieve his ambitions. While the rice was being brought in from the countryside, the 1,400-ton square rigger was scrubbed as clean as the captain's kitchen back in Maine. And when every speck of coal dust had been replaced with ton upon ton of gleaming rice grains, the N.T. Hill sailed for New York, her scuppers barely above the waterline. To be exact, she was loaded 18 inches above the plimsoll line. They say the hoodooed ship ran into a typhoon. The grain got wet and swelled, springing the planks. Then the ocean poured in, and down she went. Anyway, not a word was ever heard from J.B. Snow and the crew of the N.T. Hill unless we include the ghostly visit of one of its passengers to a neighbor back in Bucksport. Now, I've been on the track of this story for a couple of years, and there were two persons who knew about it whose word I could depend upon. Fanny Hardy Eckstorm, the well-known Maine historian, and Lincoln Calcutt of Searsport. Both had investigated this matter, but unfortunately they passed away before I had an opportunity to interview them. I thought the details of this strange marine tragedy were lost forever. But last summer, when we visited Joanna and Francis Calcutt up in Searsport, they found the story among Lincoln Calcutt's papers. In case you are inclined to poo-poo such unexplainable incidents as this, may I remind you that hundreds of New England families have had similar experiences? Listen. On a cold, bleak winter morning in 1877, Mr. Zenas Lawry of Bucksport, Maine, was soundly sleeping under his favorite comforters, when dimly through his sleep-drugged mind, he heard a pounding. As the pounding became louder, he gradually awoke to find his next-door neighbor, Ephraim Thurston, banging at the foot of his bed. Mr. Thurston was in his night clothes, but he had a blanket wrapped around his shoulders, and as he stood there, white-faced and shivering, help! Help! The thin hand that clutched the blanket around Ephraim's throat was shaking, and the hand that pounded the foot of the bed was wet and listening. Unmistakable terror flashed from the eyes of neighbor Thurston. But as Zenas Lawry, now thoroughly awake, gasped, "Why, Ephraim, what's the matter?" the familiar figure of his friend and neighbor disappeared. Zenas Lawry got up, dressed, and hurried downstairs, but he was in no condition to eat breakfast. When he told the family what he had seen, they brushed it off with, Oh, you were just dawn dreaming. That's always more real than a nightmare. Venus banged on the table and shouted, I wasn't asleep. I was wide awake after I heard him pound. I tell you, Ephraim Thurston stood at the foot of my bed, dripping wet and scared to death, less than 10 minutes ago. But, Father, he couldn't have, said one of the girls. Have you forgotten that Ephraim sailed with Captain J.B. Snow on the N.T. Hill? It's about time they were coming home. Well, they never did come home. And no word was ever received from the N.T. Hill after she sailed, loaded with all that rice. There was a typhoon, which might have crossed the path of the N.T. Hill. And she went down, as near as they can figure, just about the time that Zenas Lawry saw Ephraim Thurston's ghost standing at the foot of his bed. Was this something else which we don't wholly understand, or was it just coincidence? Well, while we're on the subject of coincidence, listen to this. Last February, we went to call on our friend, Mrs. John Montgomery of Bucksport, Maine, who was up in Winchester, Massachusetts, visiting her married daughter. While we were having dinner, I glanced at two oil portraits on the wall. Those are wonderful, I said. I'll bet they were painted in China. Yes, they were, said my host, with unmistakable pride. That stern-looking gentleman is my great-grandfather, Nahum T. Hill of Bucksport, Maine. I don't know whether you ever heard of him or not, but he was quite a fellow. Then he pointed to a beautiful mirror, an antique table, and a decanter with glasses, which had all belonged to N.T. Hill. He poured out a little wine, and we drank a toast to the grand old Yankee from Bucksport, and a second toast to his namesake, the ship which had foundered with all hands at sea. There we were, folks, just visiting a friend from Maine, and her son-in-law turned out to be Thomas Mason Hill, professor of accounting and business engineering at MIT and a direct descendant of N.T. Hill. We thought it was quite a coincidence.